we're now calling Deep Glow Skate bubbling season.
Bubbling season, I see. I was wondering what that was about. I thought maybe that might be like a song track or something you were supposed to play.
No, the song track would be that of gamers shedding salty tears of frustration and bitterness, set to music, which Nate does quite frequently.
Well, you just have to imagine that you're casting the Deep Glow Skate, then all of a sudden it becomes much better.
Yes. Well, we do have vivid imaginations. Oh, man. I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Nate Burgess.
And I am Sean Watson.
And we are Commanderin.
Commanderin.
Yes. I don't know where we went with that.
Music here. I was going for the big giant head from Malcolm and Mindy.
Oh, yeah, that worked. Hey, do you want to freestyle some music?
I'm tapping some mana as well as your mama. Oh, yeah.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to put a spotlight on community issues, but never, ever talk about four banned topics, which, of course, are religion, politics, Hearthstone, and hip-hop. But that doesn't preclude Sean from the occasional freestyle.
Yo.
All right. If you like what you hear and want to support the show, go to patreon.com/commanderandmtg and donate to us. Patreon allows you to give back to the creators you appreciate. We are also working on a few ways to give back to our patrons through exclusive offers and gifts. That's right. I have a couple of those. We made some progress on a couple of those this afternoon. If you donate $1 a show, it helps immensely. And if you donate $10 per show, you get access to all of the hosts in our exclusive Facebook chat group. Patroni there also get to contribute to show plans, and they get sneak peeks and exclusive content, usually from Mr. Burgess.
Yep.
Hey, somebody asked us today how we spell Patroni, and it's with two I's, P-A-T-R-O-N-I-I, just for what it's worth. Anyway, you can also check us out on YouTube. You can find us there by searching for Commander and MTG Podcast, can't you, Nate?
Yep.
This week, we don't have a wonderful show lined up for you. We have an awesome show lined up for you. It's so awesome. Sean is foregoing sleep in order to bring it to you.
Sleep is for the weak.
Yes, Robin posted that earlier, did he not?
Yes.
We're going to talk about Commander 2016. To do that, we brought an expert. None other than the lead designer for Commander 2016, the Blue Lord, the partner prime, Ethan Fleischer.
Hello. Thanks for having me on the show again.
We love having you.
Fleischer.
Thanks for coming.
So I'm Ethan Fleischer. I'm a member of Magic R&D. So I help make the magic cards and design the magic sets. I was the lead designer of Journey into Nyx, Commander 2014, Oath of the Gatewatch, and Commander 2016, which is coming out in just a couple of weeks.
That's a lot of stuff.
That's right.
Bravo, sir.
So I'm also a member of the Council of Colors. Mm-hmm. This is a sort of convocation of wizards who are responsible for maintaining the integrity of the color pie. And there are five of us, each representing a color, and I am Ethan the Blue, Master Wizard.
Wow, you got one of the good ones.
You got one of the two good ones.
There are at least three good colors. Come on.
How did you select blue? How were you chosen for this important role as the Blue Lord on the council.
So everyone who was going to be on the council stack ranked their colors, which ones they preferred the most. And then I believe it was based on seniority. And so I was fairly high in seniority. And so I managed to get my first choice, blue, because that is my favorite color in all of Magic.
Who is the Lord of Black, so I can start sending him love letters, or her love letters?
Gavin Verhey is the Lord of Black. He was considerably lower in the seniority standings, and so he was not given his first choice, which was blue.
Well, you know, he got the real best choice. And who is the green council of colors, so I can definitely not send them Unabomber-style letters?
Ken Nagle is the green wizard. He loves giant creatures and all sorts of other green things. So that's his favorite.
And then to round it out, who's white?
Right. Jackie Lee is the white mage. And Jules Robbins is the current red mage, though until very recently, Sean Main was the red representative.
Oh, yeah. We were going to discuss this in greater depth later. Did you have something to do with that? Blue versus red?
Yes, it was. There may have been a hydroblast involved.
Now, do you only get one copy of each spell?
Do I only get one copy of each spell? I mean, I mean, generally, yeah.
Yeah, so you can't use hydroblast against Jackie, can you?
No, and that wouldn't work anyway. I mean, Jackie is the white mage.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Of course, I could always use blue elemental blast against Jules. Were necessary. Let's not forget that there is a very nearly functionally identical version of Hydro Blast.
That's right. I did not forget that. I just forgot that it was Jules and not Jackie. Ah, well, so then Jules is the one responsible for that topic we'll be talking about later.
Moving on.
But first...
Good call.
Yeah. So a little bit of news. This is, again, self-promotion for the podcast. Next week, we have another special guest. It's someone Ethan knows very well, having just
someone
worked...
I know?
Yes. Yes.
Who is it?
The suspense is killing everyone, is it not? We are bringing on Ben Hayes, and this is the first time we're promoting someone like this, and we're trying something new. Ben Hayes, that's right. I think he was the lead developer for Commander 2016, wasn't he?
Yeah, the name sounds vaguely familiar, yeah.
Yeah.
Ben Hayes.
Yeah, Ben did some wonderful things recently, didn't he? He made, didn't he make Leovold?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for that. My paper mare salutes you.
Do you? Yes. The four other members of your meta, also known as the Leovold players, are grateful. Do you have any dirt on him? What should we ask him?
Oh, dirt, huh? Ask him why he designed Deep Glow Skate.
Ah, I knew it.
Oh, is it that his as well? So that goes on the list with Leovold and Prophet of Crufix, then.
This is a man who may actually hate Commander.
Did he do... hang on. Are we going to complete the recent holy or unholy quadrant? Did he also do Expropriate?
Oh, I don't know. You'll have to ask him.
Right, okay.
Just mention all of the cards that you hate and ask him if he designed them.
Awesome. We're actually going to mention Deep Glow Skate in a few minutes. But first, let's talk about what we've been playing or playtesting. And you know what? We only really care about what you've been playtesting, Ethan.
Well, I have to admit, I was pretty excited about Dipala Pilot Exemplar from Kaladesh. This was clearly a Boros general that was not cut from the same mold as so many other Boros generals are. And, I'm always excited about the possibility of winning Commander games with really terrible cards, so I thought, Dwarf Tribal, could it get any worse than that? Probably not. So, yeah, I've been playing around with a Dwarf/Vehicle Commander deck, and I haven't had a huge amount of winning yet, but I've certainly gotten the terrible cards part, so progress is being made. The list requires some refinement. But definitely very exciting to just generate tremendous amounts of card advantage with Dipala, even if the cards themselves are almost unplayable.
Like half a card each.
If that. Some of these are just like 1/1 Mountain Walk Dwarf. Like, what the hell am I supposed to do with that? I don't know. I'm going to find out.
Well, when you play your Blood Moon, you win.
Yeah, I guess.
Indeed. When Aether Revolt happens, who knows? You might get hit with some more vehicles and dwarves.
Yeah, it seems likely. And in fact, yeah, it could easily happen.
Yeah, it suddenly becomes the best deck ever.
I'm certainly hoping so. I bought a Dipala in anticipation of Aether Revolt. But tell me something, Ethan. The important question here is, do you make a special sound for each vehicle when it's crewed?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, the Smuggler's Thopter does not make the same noise as a Fleet Wheel Cruiser. Fleet Wheel Cruiser has a deep, throaty growl, like a Porsche sports car, whereas the Smuggler's Copter actually is completely silent. So that's how they smuggle.
Mm. The Luta Scooter.
What about the Aradara Express?
Choo-choo!
I like to imagine Sky Sovereign is just the sound of Nate laughing maniacally as he soars over the skies.
Oh, God, I love the Sky Sovereign.
Nate, have you been using Sky Sovereign?
It hasn't come out much. I don't have many decks that I use it in.
I put it in my Dipala deck as well as my Reki, the History of Kamigawa deck, because there aren't very many flying legendary things that go into a mono-green deck, so I need to use all the ones I can find.
Do you put the Weatherlight into Dipala just to sort of mock it with the other vehicles and say, this is what you should have been?
No, I don't. There are enough cards to mock in the deck already. I don't really feel the need to do any extra mocking.
Do you think we'll return to the Weatherlight Saga in order to get a new one?
That would be pretty awesome. I would be super excited if we could make a Weatherlight vehicle card at some point.
That's sort of in your remit, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, I can do anything I want. In practice, of course, there are all sorts of other people that I need to convince that things are a good idea. But, last we saw, the Weatherlight had a big hole in it and was sinking off the coast of Urborg on the plain of Dominaria. But anything's possible.
Well, when we return to Dominaria, we'll see it again.
That would be awesome.
I regularly visit Urborg to see an old friend's grave, and... I haven't seen any large ships in the ocean, so who knows?
Maybe it's been patched over with some glistening tar.
Yes, tar. Move along, nothing to see here.
Well, this week we do have a wonderful segment. The segment that is a listener favorite, which we call The Watch List.
The Watch List.
Well done.
Da, da, da.
Nate, do you want to tell us about the watch list?
So the watch list is a segment where we look at a card, and it's a powerful card, enough to warp the meta. When it shows up, you're going to have to make some adjustments to your deck to either control it, clone it, get rid of it, or put it in your deck.
Hmm. Yeah. Nasty cards. What are some of the cards that have appeared on the watch list?
Oh, Leovold, Emissary of Tress is one of them. Ulamog, the Ceaseless Hunger, Consecrated Sphinx. We got all the Soren Markov life total setting cards.
Yeah. Prophet of Krufix.
Yep, Grizzlebrand.
What about my least favorite card in all of Commander?
Go on, then.
What's that one?
Deadeye Navigator.
Ah.
I think Deadeye has been on there, yeah. I think he was an early doors one.
We might have talked about it with Sheldon.
That's good.
I mean, luckily, the card we're going to discuss today isn't disgustingly powerful with Deadeye Navigator, so...
Well, that's a relief.
Yeah.
What is that card, Sean?
Deep Glow Skate.
I'm sorry, you said that incorrectly. It's Bubbling Season?
Is it Bubbling Season? See, round my way, we've been calling it Doubling Fish.
Oh, that's funny.
Bubbling Season. Oh, if you are following the Commander and Drinking Game, prepare to get absolute drunk. It's 4 and a blue for a creature, fish, that is a 3-3. Everyone likes fish, don't they? When Deep Glow Skate enters the battlefield, double the number of each kind of counter on any number of target permanents. Its graceful glide paints the ocean floor with strokes of luminescence and the tears of commander players everywhere.
Wow.
So this is super exciting to me. I remember when I was working on Journey into Nyx, I made an entire mechanic that just did that. There would have been, I don't know, like a dozen or so cards with this mechanic. And then some developers told me that it was insane, so I had to kill it.
So surely this is something that snuck through the development process, isn't it?
It's a slippery fish.
This came out of the development process, actually. I didn't hand this thing over. This thing's crazy. Who would make such a card?
Oh, my. Who would make such a thing?
Yeah, we should welcome listeners to the Ben Hayes Memorial Watch List.
This is... He's popping up a lot lately.
I can't wait to talk to the man. I'm not going to give him a hard ride. I might ask him a few questions, though. So, this is insane. So, I've recently been playing with Esper Super Friends, specifically to avoid doubling season and saying, well, is Super Friends a legitimate strategy without the crutch of doubling season? Because every time I play against, not just green, specifically doubling season, because every time I play against Super Friends, the only way it seems to win in my meta is by doubling season or less common, but occasionally a Guild of Burn, like ultimating a Tameo, take your pick which one. And then this thing dropped, and I think the response I had was the same of many Commander players of, what the holy f-? Get ready for the bleep there. There we go.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds to me like, I mean, you said that Super Friends can't win unless it's doubly seasoned. I don't know if I agree with that.
What did it say can't win? It was the only way.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a very powerful card in Super Friends. And anything else that uses lots of counters spread out over a lot of permanents. And anything, anytime you double things, obviously, if you can do that repeatedly somehow, then it gets completely out of hand, right? Like, once you started quadrupling or octupling, or I don't know what the next one is, 16 of something, that's totally bananas.
Nate knows.
Mm-hmm. And this is an enters the battlefield effect, so it's not constrained by casting. And it can be blinked in and out of the field by a bunch of other things.
Oh, God.
It's true. It's a very powerful magic card. I'm very excited to try it out in some decks.
Yeah, we've been advising listeners to try it out as fast as they can.
That might be good advice.
So they get some use out of it.
This won't get banned.
Quick, try it out quickly before somebody bans Deadeye Navigator.
Something I've noticed, when we discuss, I mean, when we've had conversations with Sheldon Menery of the Rules Committee fame and other people, a lot of these ETB type cards seem to come down to, oh, well, it was broken because people were flickering it too easy. Like the Primordials and the Titans, the green ones that everyone always says, oh, shouldn't, or a lot of people say shouldn't really be on the ban list for the format. And I'm like, well, you hear a lot of, well, you know, get a Deadeye Navigator on this and it goes nuts. And you start to think, perhaps Deadeye Navigator is the problem here.
Well, the enabler can frequently be the problem. Like Deadeye Navigator, I think, is simply too efficient for what it does. It's just like any ETB effect becomes bananas when you can re-up it for a measly 2 mana. It's just ridiculous, in my opinion. Ben Hayes did not design Deadeye Navigator, by the way.
Ben Hayes. He did now. In my heart, he did.
He would have.
If he hears this before he comes on the show, Ben, it's all done in jest. Sorry, buddy. But Deep Glow Skate, I've heard a lot of people say, oh, it's going to get banned. Phil alluded to that notion before. People have also been saying the same about Panharmonicon. And I don't think they're going to get banned at all. I think this is the sort of effect, sort of big, splashy end of the battlefields and doubling effects is the sort of things that the Rules Committee actually like going on in our format. They like massive swingy stuff. I think 5 mana might be a bit cheap for what it does.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't seem like the sort of effect that they have historically banned in the past.
This is broke as I mean, seriously, this card is a problem.
And it works well with Panharmonicon.
It is a real problem. But, you know, it'll take a little while before that percolates down to Armada Games in Tampa. So, enjoy it.
Well, it does show up in the Atraxa Proliferate deck that also includes Hardened Scales, Corpse Jack Menace, and Vorel of the Hulklade.
Right, and a lot of those are the, you know, the sort of cards that people go to in the real world. So it has been tested by somebody, probably the Commander 2016 development team. So
that's true.
We'll see how it goes, but you know, I'm sure that if it turns out to be miserable for everyone, the rules committee will do the right thing by it.
Yeah, it's like Prophet of Crucifix. Everybody thought, you know, Prophet really helped out, and then everybody started building decks with only Prophet of, you know, Crucifix colors, basically only in Simic, or including Simic just so that they could include Prophet of Crucifix. And I think, obviously, that now blue is very well played, but I think what we're going to see is that this is a staple in any kind of deck that uses counters, and we use counters a lot in Commander. And Planeswalkers are just, I mean.
That's my problem, is the Planeswalkers. Plus ones and things, and even, well, poisons aren't permanent, so you can't double people's poison.
Right.
Or experience. Or energy, yeah, because players aren't permanents. But that's fine. It's the Planeswalkers. Like, doubling seasons hit the table, and you can see if someone's doing Super Friends, but someone with a Crozen Grip holds it normally. For, oh, he's playing Super Friends, I'm going to find that Crozen Grip or find some response to the doubling season. So when they cast the Planeswalker, this happens. The only way to stop the Deep Glow Skate is hold a counter spell or have Hushwing Griff.
Like, Torpor Orb.
Yeah, and because the Deep Glow Skate comes down after the Planeswalkers happen.
Right.
You know, not before, because the doubling season has to be before. I think that little flip around of the timing of that effect is going to push it from already sick broken into nightmare levels. And I'm really excited about Atraxa. I'm really desperately unexcited about Atraxa Super Friends.
Do you think this card makes blue Planeswalkers more of a kill on sight card?
Yes, absolutely.
I don't think it makes them more. I feel like Planeswalkers in general are always kill on sight. Like, certainly in the groups I play with, if a Planeswalker shows up, that thing has a target number one on it, always. Planeswalkers rarely make it to a second activation in the games that I play in.
That's true for games I play in, unless it's me using Narset Transcendent and I'm playing against...
I don't know how you manage to do that all the time.
Grilski. The magic gods just watch me play that card and go, yeah, you're going to get Nick.
You know, and he should know better. He plays with tokens and counters all the time.
All right, so Deep Glow Skate on the watch list.
Yeah,
I think we can all agree that it is a very powerful magic card and could get out of hand easily.
Indeed. It's a powerful magic card standing out among a bunch of powerful cards in a very good set. So, you know, even though we're ragging a little bit on poor old, what'd you call it, doubling fish?
Yeah, it's doubling fish.
Bubbling season?
Doubling fish or bubbling season, yeah.
It's still a great set. So, on to the main topic, what everybody really has tuned in to hear. Not just us whining about bubbling fish. There, I combined both of those, how about that? So, we're talking about Commander 2016. It releases only in 2 days on November 11th, 2016, for those of you from the future.
Da, da, da.
It features a cycle of 4 color commanders, 1 in each deck. Each deck retails for $34.99 US dollars per deck. And so altogether, that puts it at around $150 to $180, depending on what sort of breaks you get. And if you buy them singly, of course, you're going to pay the upper end of that. So let's talk about 4 color commanders, Ethan. Why did you do that for this set?
Basically because I'm a masochist. So yeah, we the first time we did a commander set, it was 3 color, and then we did the other 3 colors. So you know, there were a total of 10 different 3 color combinations. And then I did monocolors. And then we did enemy colors. And it came time for the next commander. And I thought, oh, I could do ally colors. That's literally the most boring thing I can think of to do. There are so many ally color commanders already available. You can already play with Stang and all of those guys. So
Stang.
I wanted a challenge, and it actually turned out to be super difficult, the hardest thing I've ever done the entire time I've worked at Wizards of the Coast.
Wow.
So turned out to be kind of an insane choice.
Hmm.
Did this manifest in like cost overruns, new broken conference room tables?
If you think of like going past the schedule and keeping people working on the thing past the point when they were scheduled to do so, that's a soft cost overrun, but that's a cost overrun.
It absolutely is.
We went into cost overruns.
Yeah, as a project manager, I would say that counts.
Yeah.
So why was it so difficult?
The hard thing about it was to come up with satisfying four-color themes for the decks that really had a nice, solid basis to them that everyone working on the decks could understand and work with and build around.
Hmm.
So the first pass we did, we made these decks. We were like, these are going to be fine. And I showed them to the development team, and they were like, what is this? How are we supposed to do this? You guys are, this doesn't make any sense. And we had to go back to the drawing board on three of the decks and completely redesign them from scratch very late in the design process.
Wow.
To bring it up to where it needed to be.
Can you talk about what some of the problems were?
The deck themes were very mechanical in nature. They didn't have a sort of strong philosophy behind them that felt like it was organic to the color pie. It was just kind of like, there are some things that are in these colors, and let's mash them together into a deck. And that's fine. I think people would have been okay with it, but I'm super happy that I was able to go back and like give them really solid identities that were endemic to their color identities.
Hmm.
I think you've, particularly with the four color specific rather than the partner guys, I think you've really pulled that off. Everything feels like it has a cohesive theme, and you can read that card and say, okay, I understand what this deck's going to want me to do and how I can expand and build on this deck if I want to expand that theme. It feels tight.
Thank you.
I think wouldn't have even known where to begin, sir. So bravo to you. Hats off.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it turned out really well. Now, without going into detail, because we're going to talk about them, what is your favorite four-color commander, and which is your favorite deck, actually?
Oh, that would be super hard to pick. All right, you're gonna pin me down. I think just as a card, I think Yidris, the Maelstrom Wielder, is my favorite, just because I love the cascade mechanic, and he makes everything have cascade, so... how can I lose?
Yeah, it's true.
That's a fun word to say, cascade.
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 Says the host piloting the Maelstrom Wanderer deck.
Shut up, you. I get to say it twice.
Yeah. And is the Yidris deck also your favorite deck?
No, I don't think so. I'm really excited about the idea of building a group hug deck out of... Kynaios and what are those guys called?
Tiro. Kynaios and Tiro.
Yeah. That, to me, like from the deck building perspective, I feel like that's the one that interests me the most because I've never made a group hug deck before. And I'm looking forward to trying something new.
Well, now you can sort of say you did.
I like that one a lot. It makes me think, how do I make this commander win? How do I win with this deck?
Yeah.
Which makes you a better Magic player.
I'll get into it when we go to the detail stuff, but I have a rather unique plan, I think.
Ooh, I'm excited.
Oh, excellent. All right. We had a couple of questions about mana bases. I know we're going to get into the mechanics shortly, but let's get the mana bases out of the way. Nate, do you want to read these?
Patron, Andrew Bentley. Hey, guys, love what you do.
I want to know how they selected the mana rocks. Like, why the ones they chose? Why Soul Ring in every deck, but not Chromatic Lantern? Also, were the new four-color commanders always going to cost one of each color, or did they fool around with activated abilities for a while?
So as far as the mana rocks go, we always put a copy of Soul Ring in every single commander box. It is just a thing that was actually mandated by Aaron Forsyth, the director of Magic R&D. He said, look, every single commander box has to have Soul Ring. It is the most iconic card. It is the most busted card of all of Commander. And almost every Commander deck wants a Soul Ring, let's be honest. You can never really have too many of those things.
Right.
So that's the answer to Soul Ring. As far as like Chromatic Lantern goes, that's a rare card. And so we generally try to avoid putting a rare reprint card in more than one of the decks. I don't know all the details about how all of the mana bases were built. A lot of that was changed a lot during development, but I can talk about general philosophy things. And then as far as the four-color commanders, we definitely always planned to have the sort of face card of the decks be a traditional multicolor card with all four colors of mana in the casting cost, but we experimented with all kinds of crazy things for what could be in the cards behind that in the box where the partners are sitting right now. We played around with a monocolor card with three different colored activated abilities. We played around with a hybrid card that was two colors in the casting cost and then had an activated ability that was another hybrid ability that was two different colors. We played around with, we literally had an equipment that had a four-colored Phyrexian mana activated, like, equip cost, and said card name can be your commander on it.
Holy hell. I would have...
Yeah, let me think, what else did we try?
Nuts, sir. Nuts.
And, we had one that was, three different hybrid mana symbols in the casting cost that no one could actually figure out how to tap their lands to cast. And we had a four-color planeswalker that said card name can be your commander that was sort of like the Commander 2014 planeswalkers.
Did you ever try flip cards?
We did not try... Oh, flip cards like from Kamigawa or like a...
Transform cards rather than flip cards, yeah, sorry.
We didn't try transform cards. I think that having double face cards in a commander set is probably exciting enough that it could support an entire product. Like that could be a whole year. Is like this time they're double face cards. So I didn't feel like using that that juice right here in this product. I felt like four color commanders was pretty exciting in and of itself.
I think the having a four pipped. Like, strong identity for one of the commanders, like the face card, was probably a good idea. So this is what this is. A bold statement.
Yeah, this is what it's about. We're doing four colors this time. If you care about that, here it is right on the front, and you can get excited. That seems like the way to go.
Yeah. You have sold me a lot of cards this season, sir. We have another question about mana bases.
Patron Henry Stukenborg. Greetings. Thanks so much for engaging with the community. The new Commander products look amazing, but I'm curious about the decision process you used to build the various mana bases, including the multicolor land choices.
All right. So some of the, you know, each deck plays differently. They all have a different strategy. And so some of them have different priorities about, like, this one really needs the lands to come in untapped, and this other one's kind of dirtily, so maybe it doesn't need that as badly. So a lot of those choices were made by people who understand things like that very well, i.e. not me, but the development team is full of people who know a lot about building a mana base, and so a lot of those decisions were made by them. One of the like cool things that we found that was particularly good for this product and maybe just wouldn't go anywhere else ever again were the Odyssey filter lands.
Yeah.
So these are lands where you can pay one mana of any color and tap this land to get two mana of a particular color. So you tap, what is it, Deepwater Catacombs or whatever, and you get blue and black at the same time. And those are, not very good at all in like a two-color deck or really even a three-color deck. But once you get up to like four or five colors, those lands really start to come into their own. So that was a cool thing that they found that I was pretty excited about.
No Zendikar fetch lands then?
No, no. If it was something that was like, oh, this is something people play a lot in Modern, or this is something people play a lot in Legacy, we'd really not rather not put that in the Commander product, just because then a bunch of Modern and Legacy players like buy the Commander product, and then the Commander players can't get it. So that's not what we want. We want the product to go to the people who actually enjoy it for what it's designed to do.
Good old True Name Nemesis.
Yeah, like we don't do True Name Nemesis anymore. And I kind of wish we hadn't done True Name Nemesis in particular at all. But we try not to aim the cards in the Commander product at other formats anymore.
Well, the presence of True Name Nemesis actually got Sean that deck for a little more than a song and a dance.
That's true. I got that deck super cheap.
That was your first freestyling, right?
It was, yeah.
It was a literal song and a dance.
I managed to find someone who desperately wanted just the True Name Nemesis, but they couldn't afford the whole deck, so they paid the lion's share of the cost, and I bought the remainder of the deck off them for, you know, a third of the RRP, or MSRP, sorry, of the deck, and said, yeah, you have the True Name Nemesis. Go have fun with that. I'm going to go play Commander. Enjoy your legacy.
Well, I'm glad it worked out for you, at least.
Yay! Go secondary market, go.
One of the new mechanics sort of relies heavily on having a diverse mana base, and that's the partner mechanic. We want to start this off with another question.
Patron, Jeremy Long. Hey guys, love the show. My question, what is the primary reason Partners was chosen over the other strategies for four-color commanders?
So first and foremost, it's because we thought Partner was super awesome. We were really excited about it. We thought that people would go crazy for it. The idea of like, oh my God, I have two commanders now, just seemed super exciting. So like just that in of itself made us very excited about Partner. And then we actually ran into problems with the other ways to define the commander's color identity, the ones that I just talked about a minute ago, the Phyrexian artifact and all that stuff. The things that were the easiest to design turned out to be the hardest to concept. So, like, the easiest thing to design was, like, this is a hybrid card and it has this other hybrid activated ability. And it's like, how the hell do you concept this? It's just like, what is this? What is this supposed to represent in the world of Magic the Gathering? I have no idea what that means. Like, how do you make five like that? So it's really important that the mechanics and the creative elements have a harmonious relationship, and that you're not just setting one thing or the other up for failure. So we ended up cutting out the sort of wild card commanders, we called them, which were the ones that were doing weird things to get to the color identity. And then we just doubled down on the partners and worked really hard on getting the normal multicolor four color cards into the right space.
Partner's beautiful, by the way.
It really is beautiful.
That was Ken Nagel. He designed that. He came up with the idea, and I was like, I don't know. This seems like it wouldn't be that great. And the other members of the team were like, no, do it. And so we tried it, and I was convinced.
So one of our listeners, Dean, he'd been playing with this exact mechanic for some self-designed cards. And he was doing a set and getting us to playtest with them. He said, I think they should do it this way. And we were like, oh, that's a great idea, but no, it would just be hybrid mana or activate abilities or something. And he was spot on the money. It was bang on. And it's such an elegant and ingenious design because it gives the player so much choice and variance in the sort of decks they can play with. I hope we see it again in the future.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know you like to try new things.
Well, if people buy enough Commander 2016, there's a good chance that we'll see them again. But if it languishes on the shelf and I get laid off as a result, then probably not.
You know, Wizards should allow us to do microtransaction sales and just let us buy individual cards directly from Wizards. That wouldn't change the rarity issues at all, would it? Sorry, it wouldn't impact rarity issues at all, would it?
Yeah, that That sounds like a surefire way for us to continue to survive as a company.
Yeah, when Dean, by the way, Dean's last name is Guti. He's at Grubfellow on Twitter. Everybody should follow Dean if they aren't already. When he came up with the mechanic, we looked at it and we just thought, yeah, you know, they're going to go with something that's a lot easier to implement. And I looked at it and I was like, wow, that's, you know, that's good, but I think it's too complex.
Yeah, it was very difficult. You know, we took a stab at designing these cards in design and then handed off in development. And a good deal of the time they spent was just getting the partners to the right power level, but also trying to find ways to design them such that you could mix and match them in different ways and get different combos. Like, obviously, every single partner doesn't combo with every single other partner, but there are a lot of interesting things you can do once you've got your two partners on the battlefield.
Yeah. Yeah. It works really well. I think we have a listener who has questions about this.
Kyle Carson asks, why 15 partners instead of 10 or 20? And why 5 allied color and 10 enemy color?
That's a very good question, Kyle. So originally we handed over to development 10 partners, one of each two color pair, and Ben Hayes was super excited about partner. He loved it, and he thought that it was really important that people would get the experience of being able to mix and match partners straight out of the box, just buying one box, so they wouldn't have to get all 5 or whatever to have some of the experience of switching up your partners. And so he wanted to have 3 partners in each deck so that you could pair one of your partners with, pair the ally color partner with one of the enemy color ones, or pair it with the other enemy color one and have variety of experience there and get a small taste of the experience of mixing and matching partners that way. So 15 was the minimum number that we could do and get that result, right? And then as far as 5 allied and 10 enemy, there are, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of ally color legendary creatures already and not nearly as many enemy colored. And so we thought, you know, all things being equal, we might as well have twice as many enemy color commanders here just so that we can correct this historical injustice.
All things being equal, says the master of blue magic. if you did them again, would you reverse it? Would you do 5 enemy, 10 allied?
Oh, I think if I did it again, I would do something other than 2 colors. You know, it'd be like, what if we did 3 colors this time? Now you can make a 5 color deck with the old ones. Or what if we did 1 color ones for whatever reason? I'm sure there's a reason why you would want to do that at some point. Like, what if we were doing 3 color decks one year and wanted to do that? I don't know. So
if you did 3 color ones, you could do 6 color decks. Oh, hang on.
Yeah, I mean, the reason we did 2 color here was because 2 + 2 = 4, and we have 4 colors. You can build 4 color decks. You cannot build 5 color decks with partners, and that's because 2016 is the year of 4 color commander.
The color square. All hail the color square.
Since we have proven influence over the Magic design team in the form of finally receiving a Thopter Queen, albeit strange colors, and of course foiled commanders in the set.
Oh man, that was, you guys really cut it close to the wire on that one. We were like, we had to destroy the entire shipment and reprint it with foil. So I hope you guys appreciate it.
Good, good.
Well, I think overall the players benefit from that. So we're happy that we had that influence, but in our next round of influencing Magic designers, the game, we really want more partners.
All right.
They're great.
Yeah, they're great.
I will see what I can do.
Yes.
Yeah, you are the even-numbered year Commander Lord, aren't you?
So far.
Blue Lord, Commander Lord, so many titles, Ethan.
Yeah, I have to admit this one actually took a lot out of me. So it may be a little while before I lead another commander set.
Yeah,
this was brutal.
How long before the 5 the color pie defenders you rename yourselves the League of Fingerless Gentlemen?
Ooh, I like that. I like that.
You can determine seniority battles by thumb wrestling.
It's not very traditional, but it sounds a little more exciting than comparing our start dates.
That's hysterical. Oh man. Do you call yourself the five council members?
No. We're still kind of working on it. Like I literally just recently ordered a blue hooded cloak, and I'm trying to encourage the other members of the council to LARP a little bit more. So we'll see how that goes. And I'm trying to come up with titles for all of us. Like I'm Master Wizard Ethan the Blue, and I'm hoping everyone will kind of get into it a little more.
Well, yeah, Ken Nagel would have to get a ghillie suit, wouldn't he?
I want the white mage to be wearing a full-on papal, like, mitre and robe.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Oh.
Yeah. So hopefully when I show up in full costume next time, they'll realize that they need to step up a little more.
Mm. Well, we did preview Kaideli. We're very grateful for that. Thank you if you had any input into that. Our listeners really appreciated it. We got a lot of feedback about that.
Yeah, I was in the preview planning meeting. I said that the commander and guys need a preview. And Blake Rasmussen, who's in charge of such things, says, oh, yeah, those guys who wrote me a song, of course I'm giving them a preview. I don't know how much, I don't think my influence had anything to do with it, and it was all about the song you guys wrote for him.
By you guys, you mean Nate. I'm not going to claim another man's credit here.
Yeah.
Did you hear the Kaideli song, Ethan?
I did. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, so did I.
Excellent.
A bit of Kyle Carson's question that we've not read that I was actually interested in the answer to myself. I can guess it, but I want to hear it from the horse's mouth. Any particular reason why both commanders need partner? It seems like it would have unlocked a crazy number of decks if only one commander needed to have the ability.
That would be crazy. Yep.
It would be insane.
Yeah, we talked about that briefly, but ultimately, if you make it so that a partner can partner with anyone, then you have obsoleted the commander format as it used to be. Like, you just make it so that there's no reason for everyone to not just run two commanders all the time, because why wouldn't you? I would love to have access to an extra commander whenever I want. So in order not to destroy the format that we love so much, we decided to make it so that the partners could only partner with each other. So if you wanted to do this thing, you had to do it within certain parameters so that my other commander decks wouldn't have to have these extra guys hanging around.
Yeah, basically every commander deck would be five color, wouldn't it, if you opened it up that way? Because like all my decks, I would just have Kaideli sitting in the command zone as well, just so I can access those cheapo ramp spells, which I don't normally play with.
Even if it wasn't five color necessarily, even if you had a Simic commander and you added Kaideli, it's just like, why would you not do that? There's no reason not to do that. And it just would make everything so much more homogenous. Like, everyone has Kaideli who's playing Simic. Well, that's boring, right? What I enjoy about Commander is the variety.
And I've never seen a Krufix themed card bust open a format before. So at least that would have been new. Ben Hayes.
It seems if you did that, the new partners would have to be a bit weaker, and you'd call them maybe sidekick or something instead of partner.
Yeah, we did talk about doing that during Commander 2014, actually. That was kind of where the lieutenant mechanic started from, was like, what if we had sidekicks? What if I had a little, like, 1-1 vanilla sidekick? That's about as much as we could give you. they would have had to have been so weak to not just be universally played that it just was clear that it wasn't to the benefit of the format.
Good call.
Andrew Bentley asks, what two partners are your favorite and least favorite?
So my favorite, I don't know what my least favorite ones are. I haven't really thought about that. I'm just going to tell you my two favorite ones and why they're my favorites. I guess my least favorite is that one that everyone complains about on the internet. What is it? The Is It guy? Ludovic, Necro Alchemist.
Oh, the one that should be Dimir colored, if you ask me.
Yeah, everyone's very unhappy with that, and that makes me sad. So he's my least favorite because he makes me sad. And then my favorite one to play with would have to be Thrasios, the Triton hero.
Ooh.
So I have this Simic deck that's like it's a ramp deck that just ramps into doofy sea monsters. And it's the Creatures of the Briny Deep deck. And Prime Speaker Zagana is the commander right now, but I feel like a commander that helps me ramp would be a lot better. And obviously, it needs to have an underwater theme, and so this Merfolk is just the thing.
Mm.
My other favorite, for reasons that have nothing to do with playing with it and everything to do with just looking at it and basking in its glory, is Siddhar Kondo of Jamura. I really love old-school magic flavor, and this is a character that goes all the way back to Tempest, I believe.
Yeah.
He was Gerard Capuchin's foster father. So I was really happy that we were able to finally print a card for this old character that's been rattling around for a long time. And I know Mark Rosewater was super happy to see that also, because he's been trying to do this for years and has never managed to pull it off.
Very quick, round the table, hosts, no explanation, your favorite single partner commander, Phil, go.
Oh.
Nate, go.
Oh, either Bio Smasher or Ikra Shiddiqui.
So then I'll go with Silas Wren, Secret Adept.
Mine is a Shy Ojutai Dragon Speaker.
Yeah.
It feels weird that some of you only chose one partner. That just seems wrong.
I did specifically just ask that. I did just say just which one. My second favorite is Ludovic, but that's because he's actually a Dimir commander that's just been color shifted.
Mine is Tana the Blood Sower.
All right.
Yeah, just straightforward, hit them with something big and then make more tokens.
I think Akiri Lineslinger's got potential for, like, her and, was it her? He, sorry. No, it is a her. Her and Silas Wren together makes that no green deck that I really like without using Breyer. And I like Breyer. So yeah, I'm looking forward to partnering those two together.
I think it's telling you didn't select either of the Orzhov commanders.
Yeah, I still can't see past my girl Ailey. Sorry.
Ailey is a saucy dish, that's for
yeah,
sure.
I'm married to Ailey. It's like American sports teams, you know. I'm married to one team, but I can have a girlfriend team as well. But, you know, you do it in a different, you know, division at least. You don't do it in your own home. So I'm not going to cheat on Ailey.
Wow. That's some loyalty there. Are you sure that's Dimir? Are you sure you're Dimir?
Oh, I know. Well, I'm Esper, really, aren't I? But
yeah, you really have switched, though.
Yeah, well, I do love the Orzhov philosophy. It plays how I like to play Magic. Anyway, we're going way off topic into me.
Way off topic.
Right.
All right.
There's actually another mechanic, brand new mechanic in this set, and it's Undaunted.
Right. Undaunted says this spell costs one less to cast for each opponent. Hmm. So obviously this is not something we would ever put in a regular Magic set where you only ever have one opponent under most circumstances. And even in a two-headed giant thing, it's not that exciting. But in Commander, you can have quite a few opponents. I've certainly had four opponents quite a few times.
Yeah.
So this is a way to get some powerful effects in there. And, you know, the greater the opposition, the easier it is to do it. It's pretty simple and straightforward, but I think it has a nice pleasing simplicity to it.
Yeah, one of the new Undaunted cards has kind of stirred up the internet a bit. Divergent Transformations. It's the red instant that exiles two target creatures, and for each of those creatures, its controller reveals cards from the top of his or her library until he or she reveals a creature card, puts that card onto the battlefield, then shuffles the rest into his or her library.
Right, so this came out of the Council of Colors. We don't just zealously guard the color pie in a very conservative way. We also look at ways that we can adjust the color pie to make Magic more fun. One of the things that we noticed was that red was struggling in multiplayer, Red is traditionally very aggressively focused, and it has a lot of, sort of tries to use every resource at its disposal to get the opponent down to zero life as quickly as possible. And when you have, you know, three or four opponents, this becomes difficult. Like, the amount of resources that is needed to get one person from 20 to zero is not up to the task of getting three opponents from 40 down to zero each. It's just... Right. Doesn't scale that way very well. So we've been looking at sort of multiplayer and commander friendly mechanics that we can make up for red, or that we can move from one color into red. And Divergent Transformations represents the idea of the polymorph effect, which has been traditionally blue. We thought, oh, this feels chaotic. This feels random. So let's give it to red and see what kind of fun things red can do with that.
Is that going to be a permanent switch? Is it going to become like it's now primary in red and secondary in blue? Or
I think if it feels wild and random, it'll be red. And if it feels more controlled, it'll be blue. So they'll both share a similar space. But in general, yeah, the very random ones will be red.
Art department did a cracking job on Divergent Transformations.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Kev Walker, and he can always do a humorous one when we need it.
This is a good one.
So this is not a retconning of another color pie break/bend, is it? This is something you guys actually thought about and said, no, this really is something we should do.
Yes, this was very deliberate. This is not a situation where somebody made a mistake or went off the reservation. It was very much planned out in advance, and you'll be seeing more cards like this in the future.
Awesome.
Is this when you, as the Blue Lord, decided to exact a cost or apply a cost and say, no, I need something?
Well, I got something. So you'll see what that is, you know, when we get to it, when it comes out. But yes.
Is Blue getting a burn spell?
Yeah, not a burn spell, but you'll see.
One blue mana, three damage to target creature or player. Instant speed. Hang on, this seems familiar somehow.
Blue now gets coin flips. All right. Hey, let's move on. This is kind of the, is this the dessert of our show? Where we talk about the new four commanders?
Yeah, let's do it.
The four color commanders, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, let's hit this one. Which of you two wants to talk about Atraxa?
I'm the resident Phyrexian here, sir.
Yeah. Well, wait, there's nothing Phyrexian about her.
Mm-hmm. You wish, Phil. You wish.
Hey, I'm playing her.
Oh, really, Phil? I think that should be forbidden.
No, it just means Phil's tainted.
We got him, finally. Yes.
But she's so good. This is not fair.
Oh, but Phil, I thought playing with Phyrexian cards was playing easy mode, and that way you shouldn't do it.
I want to play easy mode once in a while.
Oh, I mean, I'm about to discuss a card with green in its color cost, so I agree. So, Atraxa, Praetor's voice. A green, a white, a blue, and a black. For a 4/4, flying, vigilance, death touch, lifelink. Sounds good, doesn't it, kids? But also, wait, there's more. At the beginning of your end step, proliferate. And those of you who don't know, that's choose a number of permanents and or players with counters on them and give each one another counter of a kind already there.
Not a single Phyrexian reference on that card.
No, legendary creature, angel horror. Now there's a creature type.
Yeah.
And praetors come in all varieties of species.
Yeah, that's right. She's part of the Roman legion. They've shifted to a human, like, earthbound realm. And she's a legionary.
I'm just saying there have been other praetors in Magic's history than the Phyrexian praetors.
Are you speaking of Eben Praetor?
I am.
Who is officiating some sort of bunny wedding, apparently.
Yeah.
That is one of the weirdest Magic illustrations of all time.
It's the bunny wedding of the century.
Now, I loved the artwork on this card so much. I tweeted at the wonderful artist, which is Victor Adame, there you go. Sorry, it's an amazing piece of artwork. This card, though, the reason I was most excited about this card, the first thing everyone said was, oh, that would be a great Super Friends commander. Forget that. This commander is everything you want it to be. You want to build Infect?
You can do so many things with
it. Yeah. You want to build Infect? Go nuts. If you want to build Abzan plus one counters with like a sub-token theme, because you've got the Selesnya combo in there as well. I mean, you have that in Abzan, but you've got the blue to support the card draw with it. Go nuts. Have fun. This is just an amazingly powerful card.
Yes.
It would be great even without the proliferate.
Well, yes, but I feel like the proliferate is the essence of the card. Like, the proliferate is the meat of the card.
Oh, yeah.
Flying, Vigilance, Death Touch, Lifelink are just sort of a little extra, you know, on top.
The delicious veg.
The cherry on top, so to speak. But the proliferate is what enables you to build a deck around it, right? That's where you just have to find all these crazy cards that use counters.
So I'm going to build this as a sort of an Esper control with a heavy planeswalker, not super friend specifically, but heavy planeswalker as part of that control sub theme, and then use angels and horrors to do the killing and protecting.
Whereas I am going to put Aether Snap into all of my black decks.
And what's that very cool vampire that got printed recently? Thief of Blood.
Oh, yeah, I designed that one.
Oh, well done, Ethan.
That was mine.
Good choice.
Yeah, good choice.
These counters, they're just running rampant. We've got to do something.
Vampire Hexmage as well, if you want a good bit of budget counter killer planeswalker when someone puts their bubbling fish on the stack. I mean, Atrax is fantastic.
Have you seen her little toes? If you look at the art, like a blown up version of the art, she has little normal human toes. It's so creepy.
Ooh. So, I mean, the art, I love it. My favorite ever piece of magic artwork is Elesh Norn Grand Cenobite. The starkness of the colors and this the red and the white sort of contrasting and the horror in the image is beautiful. This is tuning right into that. It's just A+ for me. Even if it has got the horrific green in the casting cost, but you know.
So do you view this as natural Esper or wet Abzan?
Oh, it depends. I think you could build it either. So I've heard people calling this Esper green and I've heard people calling it Abzan blue. I think it's probably more Abzan blue, isn't it? But I actually think it's probably Bant black, if we're honest.
See, I would prefer if everyone just called them by the commander's names. Like, what if this color combination was just Atraxa from now on, right?
Yes.
Is that the way you're thinking of it?
That's how I like to think of it, but I don't know if that's the right answer, but that's the one that feels right, because if it's like these three colors and then this other color, I don't know, that feels awkward to me.
It's because in Standard you had that Jeskai black deck, and I think that set the convention for a four-color theme.
Yeah, Dark Jeskai.
Dark Jeskai, yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe this is Dark Bant.
Sean, in the Skype text chat window, I've posted a link for you. So that you may, you and Ethan may together indulge your
toe fetish.
Odd human foot fetish.
All right, we should probably move on. We only have 5 minutes left for each commander.
Okay. Oh my goodness.
God, that's Atraxa, yes.
All right, who wants to talk about Breya Aetherium Shaper?
I'll talk about her, since I've drawn her in my league, actually. Breya Aetherium Shaper is our next four-color commander. She is white, blue, black, red, a legendary artifact creature, human, 4/4. When Breya enters the battlefield, create 2/1/1 blue Thopter artifact creature tokens with flying. For 2 generic mana and sacrifice 2 artifacts, what a coincidence, you can choose one. Breya deals 3 damage to target player. Target creature gets -4/-4 until end of turn. You gain 5 life. No one's ever going to use that one. But there you go.
Not sure about that.
Maybe at instant speed in emergency.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody's got a Wrath on the stack and they don't have anything better to do, why not gain some life?
True, true. Oh, we should ask, who is the sub-team design lead for Atraxa?
So, it was pretty complicated. I think Robert Schuster, I believe. Robert Schuster was the designer of the artifact deck. I don't remember which developer worked on each deck. Some of the decks got passed around a lot also during design, but the artifact deck was almost entirely Robert Schuster. I did a little bit of tweaking toward the end of the process, but and then it was handed to the developers.
Was that tweaking done after we talked about the need for a Thopter Queen?
Possibly. No, it's pretty awesome that it all worked out the way you guys wanted it to, isn't it?
Yes, just as planned.
Yeah, and you don't have to play the white and black in this deck.
It's true. It's true. And of course, we have heard the cries of the people for a blue-red artifact theme commander, and we're working on it. We'll get there. We'll get there eventually. Mm-hmm. It may take a little while.
If only you had an artifact themed set in standard at the moment. If only.
Yeah, it didn't work out for Kaladesh Block for a variety of reasons, but it is definitely on our radar.
It was very important we have Saheeli Rai.
Yes, we needed Saheeli Rai. And so I'm afraid that pushed out the possibility of doing a legendary creature in those color combination.
And you're reprinting Dak Faden in the next set, right?
Am I? What? He's not much of a commander, is he?
No, I meant in Aether Revolt. He comes in and he steals something important, and that makes a lot of people upset, so they revolt, right?
He's going to steal all kinds of things, and everyone's going to get mad at him.
Yeah.
And that concludes our conversation about Breya, Ethereum Shaper.
We are not easily distracted.
Breya is awesome. She is, when I read her, I just thought, shenanigans. There's stuff you can do here that's not. She's a subtle knife, shall we say.
Indeed.
I am basically taking apart my Sidri Galvanic Genius deck to put her in and squeeze a load of cool red stuff, artifact stuff into it, and dropping Sidri into it. But it's like trying to make cuts to that deck is hard. It's like losing your babies.
Yeah, the deck list as printed is pretty good, though.
Yeah, nice reprint of Blinkmoth Urn. Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Like that card.
I'm just going to take Hannah's Ship's Navigator out of the artifact deck and make an entirely Therese Nielsen art Azorius deck.
Very nice idea.
It's going to be suboptimal.
But it has the single most powerful counterspell ever printed in that deck.
That's true. It's not totally powerless, that's for sure.
But Breya, what can we do with Breya?
We could discuss her actually in a future episode.
Yes, I'd like to. I think she's worthy of a deep conversation.
Yeah, I think so. I think each of these is probably worth a conversation or so.
All right, can I take the next card?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Kynaios and Tiro of Miletus. So these fine fellows say they're red, green, white, blue for a legendary creature, human soldier. They're 2/8. And it says, at the beginning of your end step, draw a card. Each player may put a land card from his or her hand onto the battlefield, and then each opponent who didn't draws a card.
Yay.
Look what we've fought for. Look what we've built together. So my plan is to build, modify the deck that comes in the box and make a group hug deck that never attacks anyone and just gives people things, probably gives the weakest player things and just tries to make everybody happy and make sure that everyone has enough mana and everyone has enough cards and gets to do their thing. And then when the time is right, when I have enough mana, I will draw Hurricane or I will draw Earthquake and I will kill all but one player at the table. Then the player who remains might be me. It might be someone else. We're just going to have fun until we don't. And then the game will be over. Or at least that's the plan.
Wow, what do you say to that, right?
That's how you win. Right. Now I know. That's his secret tech. Hurricane or earthquake.
And it's important to note, it's not even him winning, necessarily. But he still wins.
Right. With this deck that I envision, it's not going to be about winning. It's just going to be about making sure that everyone has fun, that everyone has enough cards, and everyone has, some token creatures if they need them, some extra lands if they need them. And then when we've had our fun, it'll be over.
It's the opposite of stacks decks. It's beautiful.
Yes, it is. It's like an anti-stacks deck.
Which is weird because it's in the traditional, three of the traditional colors of stacks decks.
I loathe stacks decks, except for Hate Bears decks. I like a Hate Bears deck, which is sort of stacks deck.
All right.
Quick question. Which of these two chaps is Kynaios and which is Tiro?
Wow.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I'm just going to assume it goes from left to right and say that's it, but I don't actually know the canonical answer to that.
Find out and tweet us.
All right. I'll let you know. I'll talk to Kelly Diggs or someone from the creative team and find out which is which. It didn't occur to me for some reason to even think about that.
I don't think I've seen that answered anywhere.
Two different people have asked me that. I said, which is which? And I think they asked it on the Commander's Brew podcast as well.
Oh my goodness. All right. Well, clearly the people want to know.
Yes.
And I am a man of the people.
People need to know.
So I will find out.
And did you design it as 2 1-4s? With partner.
Of course. No, in design, this card was called Parade Float Mayor because you were handing out treats to everyone from the float going down the street.
Parade Float Mayor.
Yeah. It's a flavor win card, by the way. And I think what's happened on the Vorfoss with it is excellent for the community.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm super happy with the card. I'm happy that it's going to be on the front of packages in every Walmart in the United States very soon.
That's going to be great. You know, something is lost, though, when Creative gets their claws on these cards. Parade Float Mayor? We need a Parade Float Mayor now. It has to be a goblin, too.
Well, something is lost. Something is lost, but many things are gained.
Yes.
I like to think that it's overall a win for us. And I'm super happy with how this card was concepted. I think it's terrific.
Yeah.
So this next card, when I first read it, I thought of Nate. So I think Nate should take it.
Mm-hmm. Saskia the Unyielding. Black, red, green, white. Legendary creature, human soldier, 3/4. Vigilance, haste. As Saskia the Unyielding enters the battlefield, choose a player named Sean. Whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, it deals that much damage to the chosen player as well.
That's funny. My copy reads the same way.
This will be for the edit, but you both. Right.
Oh, I think that might stay in.
I think I might have designed this card, actually. It's hard to keep track anymore, but this one looks like I might have designed it. I'm not sure.
Why couldn't that have been a triggered ability when she enters the battlefield?
Wait, which bit?
Well, according to the show notes, that would be broken with panharmonica and strionic resonator, so that would be terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
So am I right in thinking if you crack a Blade of Selves onto her, attack with her, they all enter the battlefield, the copies all die, but you've set all players to Saskia's ability?
No, the players chosen by the tokens, only the tokens care about those ones.
Are you sure?
Each copy of Saskia is treated separately, and they would all have their own chosen players, but they don't all the players chosen don't all like converge on the real Saskia or anything like that.
You're just taking all the fun away.
I've seen people, a lot of the preliminary decks for Saskia have got the Blade of Selves in it, so I was wondering if people are thinking that one of them slightly quirky rules.
Yeah, it doesn't work at all.
Yeah, that's too bad. But I mean, still.
I mean, Blade of Selves can go on any of the other creatures in the deck, which plays into the theme of, like, hit everyone for lots of damage and kill them as quickly as possible. So it may just be thematically appropriate.
I think what you want here, Sean, is a double combat phase. And between the combat phases, you want to blink Saskia.
Tricky.
It could be done.
What I would want is Saskia on the field, a Hydra Omnivore with a Blade of Selves on it.
Ooh. Well, hold on. Let me write this down.
That's the magical Christmas land.
You don't even need Saskia for that anymore.
No, but Saskia will like do a lot of additional time. Let's say you're in a 4-player game. So Nate's been Saskia'd and 3 Hydra Omnivores attack. How much damage does Nate take? You can do the maths, gang.
Maths.
Let's say he's just at 8/8. He's not got any bonuses on him. Just 8/8. Green's so dumb.
Yeah, that's a lot of damage. 32 points, I think.
I think it's more than that.
It is more than that,
eight,
yeah.
It's 8 times 3 times 3.
That sounds like more than enough.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to the next one.
Yidris, Maelstrom Wielder. Blue, black, red, green, legendary creature, ogre wizard 5/4 with trample. Whenever Yidris, Maelstrom Wielder deals combat damage to a player, then as you cast spells from your hand this turn, they gain cascade.
Cascade. So this guy is wielding elemental chaos here.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That Maelstrom is something, huh?
It really is something. That Maelstrom, I don't know.
Hey, how about that Maelstrom?
Yeah, I mean, I love Cascade. I love sometimes, you know, sometimes you're just too tired to be strategic, and you just kind of want to, like, let's just see what happens. We don't need to plan this out. Let's just do it, and hopefully it'll be something cool. And, yeah, I think we have a lot of things like that in this deck.
It's a very red deck, isn't it? It feels red. It is. It's the way it wants to play.
Yeah, it's sort of the embodies the opposition to white's orderliness, and you know that is sort of the essential red-white conflict is order versus chaos. So it is a very red feeling deck.
Yeah, we didn't really have time to dive into that. Mark's article on that. Was it Mark or you who wrote that article?
Oh, I wrote that one.
Okay. Well, your article about that, Ethan, was really cool. It was neat that you found a way to embody what these decks were about by just looking at what everybody else had in common against the color that was excluded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, find some objectionable quality to the color, and then you know everyone else is in opposition to that. So like black is all about selfishness, and so the non-black deck was all about altruism, right? Ayn Rand would hate that deck, but that's our philosophy.
I only recently discovered who Ayn Rand was, by the way. What a fascinatingly...
Yeah, that, you probably don't see nearly as much of her in Britain, I assume.
Yeah. No.
Well, so as with any podcast that begins discussing Ayn Rand, we are probably at the end of the show.
quick bit of tech for Yidris, sorry. Beseech the Queen is an amazing tutor for Yidris because it actually has a CMC of 6 because of its weird hybrid mana. There you go. Good bit of cheapo tech.
Yeah, or anything with like a cost reduction or alternate casting cost could be pretty bananas.
Mm. Yep.
Lovely. I guess we'll be seeing plenty of that, huh?
Beseech the Queen.
Well, we actually have plenty of questions we're just not going to get to. We have more from a few selected listeners. We have some from patrons, friends of the show. We even have some from Daryl Bockett, the casual guy. But we're just not going to have the time to address all these, are we?
Yes, unfortunately. I'll tell you what. Is there some way we can do this later via email or on Twitter or something cool like that?
Oh, if you wanted to do an Ethan Reads segment, we could send you the questions and you can read those into a file all on your own if you want.
All right. I will do that. That sounds great.
Wow. Thank you. That's really cool, man. Thanks.
No problem.
We should record some interstitials. Just us going, that is interesting. And, I agree. And you guys can just edit them in.
Or, yeah, excellent observation, Ethan.
That would be an ecumenical matter.
No, that sounds good.
That's a reference for fans of British comedy. Really only, but yes.
There's something in the works that we could talk about. So we asked one of the PR representatives from Wizards, Kayla, if Wizards could provide a set of Commander 2016 that both Ethan and Ben sign.
And she said yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's only 500 cards.
Well, yeah. Ethan's hand is going to get a little bit tired, but that's okay. He needs a break from designing Magic cards. No, actually, Ben and Ethan will sign the boxes in the set, and then we'll give that set away to one of our listeners. Details of the contest are still to be determined. All right, Ethan, it is the end of the show. Do you have a message of the week for us?
So my message is, at the commander table, always comport yourself with honor and with dignity.
That's great.
Don't use stacks.
If people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way for them to do it?
The best way is to contact me on Twitter. I am at Ethan Fleischer. That's E-T-H-A-N-F-L-E-I-S-C-H-E-R. Or you can email me at Wizards of the Coast. So that's ethan.fleischer@wizards.com. I always love to hear from fans and discuss how we can make magic better.
Wow.
Mm.
That's awesome that you gave everybody your work email address.
Yeah, just hit me. It's fine.
Thanks for coming on the show. This was a blast.
Oh, I had a great time too. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
We love having you, Ethan. We genuinely do.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. So thanks for
Am I supposed to say something?
No, we're all group hugging right now.
Phil's gone wistful on us. Sorry. He goes into these moments of reverie occasionally. I miss you, Ethan. It's been so long.
Well, I guess we'll see you whenever the next set comes out. You
poor fingerless bastard.
Yeah, it won't be too long. I was one of the lead designers of Amonkhet, which is coming out in just a few months. So I would be super happy to come back to the show.
Oh, excellent.
Talk about all the sweet legendary creatures that are in that set.
Oh yeah.
Ancient
and more.
Egypt. Oh my God, I'm so excited.
I know. We saw the cover for the art book today and it's amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be real good.
My favorite sort of mythology / history period, ancient Egypt. I'm so excited.
So, a sneak peek, will there be large monuments to Nicol Bolas in this set?
I couldn't say. I'm not allowed to say anything about it.
Not even Bolas horns?
All those things that you may or may not have seen, I can't say anything about.
Got it. Okay.
I want to see a giant dragon riding a tiny chariot through the desert, whipping some tired-looking horses that are looking up at him with an expression on their face as if to say, "You can fly, man. Why are you doing this to us?" But, you know.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. If you like what you heard this episode, head on over to patreon.com/commanderandmtg and donate a buck a show. We really appreciate it. Or just give us a 5-star review on iTunes. I'm not saying that contest we were just talking about, maybe. I'm not saying that contest will have anything to do with 5-star ratings on iTunes or Patreon donators, but it might. We love our listeners, and we're incredibly grateful to all of the patroni of our show. So come get your gratitude and influence exactly like Mr. Big Bent's Henry Stukenborg. That made some people wince. And Jeremy Longott this episode. Come playtest with us, and if you donate $10 or more per episode, you can come join the patron chat.
And help Phil learn how to speak.
And if you donate $10 or more per episode, you can come join the patron chat we host over on Facebook and give Phil some speech coaching lessons. Our theme song, Ethan, I don't know if you realize this, but our theme song and the Kaideli song and the Blake Rasmussen song were all written by one person. Can you guess who?
Is it Sean Watson?
Nuh-uh.
It's very close.
Nope.
Is it Phil DeLuca?
Nope.
Not in this world or any other.
I give up. Who is it?
Mr. Nate Burgess.
This guy.
Very nice work, Mr. Burgess.
Yes. Yes. That song was over the top. It was fantastic. Our logo was created for the podcast by Mr. Picto with assistance from my wife, Kelly. Special thanks to the tech whizzes, Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank, and to Justin for his service base. You can reach us by going to our website, commanderandmtg.com. Our email is, this is a complete surprise, cast@commanderandmtg.com. You can find us on every social media, including YouTube. Go to YouTube, subscribe, like, and listen to the show at 1.25 speed like Nate does. All the way to the end, you can find us by searching for Commander and MTG Podcast. Individually on Twitter, I'm at KetJack.
I am at Copain26.
I'm at Mr. Plorg.
Ethan, sir, would you take us out of this wonderful episode?
And that's our show.
Bravo, sir.
Beautiful.
I can always tell the guests that have listened to us because they take us out properly. Where some of them go, oh, yeah, I listen. And you go, and take us out. And they go, bye, see you next time.
yes, sometimes awkward silence.
Cheers.
yeah, that's a good one.
I would love a soundbite of Ethan saying, modern. Oh, yeah. But yeah, I understand if you can't say that.
All right, well, good night, fellas.
Thank you, Ethan. What a pleasure.